Thanks for meeting the parking lot. Can everybody clear? Okay, you, is that okay? Anything else needed? Okay, great.
Oh, yeah, everyone has a pre-assigned van. I'm gonna be in the open parking lot at 1:30 with you guys. So, like, it's not like just get out there, man.
Okay, this is a fun topic, guys, that I've never convinced you on before. Okay. So many of you have heard the idea that maybe mitzvot have a different status in Chutz Laretz and in Eretz Yisrael. And the question is that true in our tradition? Now let's clarify what mitzvot we're talking about. Obviously, things like Shemitah and Trumot HaMaaser are limited to land of Israel. Right? None of you kept the sabbatical year in Beechwood or in, you know, West Orange. Okay, but so that's pretty obvious. But what about things like Sukkot and Tefillin? Like, would you say, okay, that's not an Israel thing, so my tefillin wearing is all the same, whether I'm in Los Angeles or in Tveria? Would you say, even for those mitzvot, there is a difference? And that's, I think, a pretty important topic. Like, how much does our tradition really emphasize authentic Jewish life, specifically in the land of Israel? How much do we say, no, you could have a pretty rich Jewish life even outside the land of Israel? Dov.
Are we going to address if there's any difference between what the actual borders are now or what the
Well, just curious though, I wasn't planning, like, why do I need to do that? I mean, one question is Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz Laretz. Then we could debate, how do we define what is Eretz Yisrael? But couldn't that be like a secondary question that we could push aside?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not going to ask that question. We are not going to figure out if Eilat is actually part of Israel or not. Is that the Nafka Minitov? Would you like to move to Eilat?
No college basketball there.
If there's like an intrinsic value to what the Torah says is the land, then maybe it affects it.
Okay, we're going to leave that aside. Okay, so let's start with the famous source, guys. It all comes from a Sifri, right? Sifri, of course, is the Midrash Halacha on by Midbar and Dvarim. So it's from the famous Pesukim from the second paragraph of Shema. Dover Acher, Vavadatem Hira. What does it say in Shema? First it talks about if you do mitzvot, and if you don't do mitzvot, what's going to happen if you don't do mitzvot? You're going to go into Galut. What does it say right after the Galut? What does it talk about? Which mitzvah will come up right away, guys? Tefillin and mezuzah, right? So says the Sifri, what's going on? How come these mitzvah come up immediately after the idea of Galut? This is the famous source of this idea. Why did the mitzvahs in Chutz Laretz? It is only to keep in practice, right? Really, mitzvot are meant for, it sounds like mitzvot are really meant for the land of Israel. So what does the Torah tell me in the second paragraph of Shema? When you go into exile, keep doing the mitzvot, so you'll stay in practice. Okay, so if you are a flaming Zionist and you like this idea, here is your source. Okay, David Ben-Tor is looking happy. Okay, we have to decide who has a better shirt today, David Ben-Tor or Joey Gidalia, not sure. Okay? Okay, fine. Okay, so in any case, now, notice one interesting thing. Which mitzvot is the Sifri talking about? So at least on an explicit level, it's not so clear, right? It just says the word mitzvot. Wait, does the Sifri say the word tefillin and mezuzah? No. The Sifri just says mitzvot. Okay, now Rashi, of course, chooses which midrashim to quote. Rashi thinks that this midrash is worth quoting, so we go to Rashi. The Sandrai, af la'achar shetigalu, even after you're in exile, hayu mitzvot b'mitzvot, now Rashi, unlike the Sifri, Rashi is specific. Rashi says, what mitzvah are we talking about? Tefillin and mezuzah. Now to be fair to Rashi, this is hardly a, you know, radical chiddush of Rashi. Why did Rashi pick tefillin and mezuzah? That's what the Pesukim are about, right? So it's not as if Rashi is saying, oh Rashi, how did you know that? Why did you do that? So I want to be fair to Rashi here. You could say Rashi is the simple reading of the Sifri. But then we're going to come back to this later. The Sifri just said the word mitzvah. Now, if Rashi's right, we seem to have a pretty radical idea. Or for those of the flaming Zionists, they'll love it. What does it sound like? Not only is Shemitah meant for the land of Israel, even mitzvot such as tefillin and mezuzah. So at that point, you seem to say all mitzvot are really meant for the land of Israel. That would seem to really downplay the value and worth of mitzvah performance in Chutz Laretz. That's what the position that Rashi seems to be advancing here. David? Oh, very good. So that is quite interesting. In a certain sense, the Maharal is going to make that point. Okay, you know, maybe we'll jump ahead for a second, actually. Okay, I wasn't going to do that now, but we will jump ahead. There's a way, actually, no, wait a little bit. Because there is a way to kind of tone this down, as David just said. Okay, yeah, Yoni.
Is it possible to say that, like, filling is an ode, and, like maybe the part of Shabbos and Yom Tov or other mitzvot that are also, like, odio, like, you might not be chayav.
Okay, interesting. So Yoni's giving us an interesting approach. I mean, even if I go with Rashi, maybe there's something kind of unique to tefillin and mezuzah that they're not the same as other mitzvot. The tefillin and mezuzah we need to point out in a way that we wouldn't have to for, you know, Sukkot and Pesach or something like that, or Shabbos. So we're going to come back to that possibility. Yeah, Aaron.
Under, like, Rashi and the Sifri's understanding, would this also apply to mitzvot lotasah, or specifically the Sifri?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure what the answer is. Yeah, Noah.
Are we discussing here, like, the metaphysical consequences of mitzvah, or, like, positive and negative results of doing mitzvah? What exactly are we discussing where it's saying, like, it doesn't matter when it happens outside of mitzvah?
Ah, that's interesting. So, it's such a question. I suppose one could say it either way. You're right. You could say, no one wants to connect this to how I think. No, there is something to what he's saying, actually. Okay, no one wants to connect this to how I think about Tamei HaMitzvah. So let's think, guys. You might even say that's the Chakir. You could make like a Lundish Chakir about Machshav over here. If I think about Tamei HaMitzvah in a this-worldly impact, like, let's say, why do I do Shiluach HaKan? Because then I'll learn to be merciful on the animal kingdom. So if I say that, what could one argue? Well, shouldn't that be true just as much outside of Israel as Israel? So if I have a very this-worldly approach to Tamei HaMitzvot, it'll be less obvious to go this Sifri approach. If I think in more metaphysical terms, that when I do Shiluach HaKan, it makes metaphysical machinery move and fixes the rift in the cosmos, so at that point, it might be easier to argue that in the land of Israel, you have this conduit to the metaphysics in a way that you don't. Outside, no, that's what you mean? Yeah, it's a good point. You could make that claim. Okay, you could, in theory, say this might be a function of how I think about the purpose of mitzvah. Yeah?
Do you think the Sifri and Rashi are saying that the only reason for why we do mitzvah outside of Eretz Yisrael is so that we come back and that we're ready, or do you think it's just like a partial aspect?
Okay, so we'll come back to that also. Okay? All right, anybody else with a comment on this? Yeah, Avi.
According to the Sifri, would you make a bracha, or no?
Okay, we'll get there in a minute also. Gets to David Ben-Tor's point. Okay, good. Now, one more person. I think we've said this before, guys. It's if you are a real Zionist here, well, guys, remind me again. Who in general is the flaming Zionist this year? David Ben-Tor, right? Okay, here's David Ben-Tor. So, David, you need to know this. Okay, so who are the two Rishonim who most expressed the significance of the land of Israel?
Ramban
and? I would say the Kuzri, a beautiful lady. Very good. Okay, they are the two great lovers of the land of Israel. And Ramban put his money where his mouth is, of course, at the end of his life. He moved to Israel. Notice there's a shul in the old city called Beit HaKnesset HaRamban. Why is there no shul in the old city called Beit HaKnesset Rashi? Because Rashi never came here. But the Ramban did come here. Okay, so and by the way, it wasn't so easy to come here in the 1260s. Okay, so I think the Ramban gets credit for sticking to his ideals. So let's see what the Ramban says. He famously quotes this also. V'nei ha-katuv shem ha-vavadat ha-meir v'sant v'ayela einu m'chuya b'galut el b'chov ragov k'tzun m'zuzo. Here it is. Here's the line. For all mitzvot, they are essentially performed in the land of Israel. The Ramban is quite explicit. And then he even says something very interesting. If you skip down to the middle of the fifth line, he says, so apparently at the time of Yechezkel, some Jews thought, okay, the covenant's over. Now, this is quite interesting historically. Why would some Jews think the covenant is over in the time of Yechezkel? What happened? Where is he? Where? I don't know where Yechezkel prophesies mostly. Yechezkel prophesies in Bavel. So that's the story of the first Galut. Now, I always point this out, guys. You have to think a bit historically. When we hear, does Jewish life go on in the exile? For us, it's not much of a question. We did it for centuries. We're good at it. We did it for the last 2,000 years. Like, of course, Jewish life goes on in the exile. But imagine you were alive at the first Churban HaBayit. Wouldn't it be a little bit of a question? Right? You don't really know another model. You're used to the idea that you have a Beit Midrash and you live in the land of Israel, and that's where religious life flourishes. So you could easily have this Havamin, as it were, once we go into Golot Bavel, it's all over. Like, the game's up. Like, the breed comes to a halt. But now, for the Ramban, people who thought that, in some sense, weren't actually being crazy. What were they basically saying? Oh, mitzvot are really meant for the land of Israel. So therefore, we kind of think that the game's up now that we're here in Galut. But of course, the Ramban doesn't think the game's up. but it gives a different angle on that thought process in the time of Yechezkel. Okay, we're good? Great. Let's look at the other Ramban 4, and then we'll start to balance things a little bit. Okay, so in source 4, the Ramban says this again. As you guys know, there's a famous question, whether the Avot kept the mitzvot or not. Okay, and those of you who don't think they did, good news, a lot of you showed them are on your side. Okay, not everybody thinks the Avot kept Kol HaTorah Kula. Okay, what? I'm sorry?
Isn't like the Torah Pshat on our side?
Yes, and the Pshat's on your side also. That is correct there. Okay. Yes, yes, the Pshat is on your side. Okay, so says the Ramban, so Avram, according to this line of Ramban, did have access to the whole Torah. Vishamrota kula kamisha eno mitsuve vaose. Right, he does has kind of a middle position. Ramban says Avram did keep the Torah kula, but in what category was he? Eno mitsuve vaose. So that makes him a lot more flexible. He was like a woman deciding to keep sitting in a sukkah. She has an option and it's a mitzvah, but it's not obligatory. That's how Avram related to mitzvah. Why does that help? Once it's kind of voluntary, what could Avram have decided? When do I really have to keep it? In Eretz Yisrael, which fits the Ramban, right? Because that's the essential place for Torah and mitzvah. Ah, v'yakov b'chutz laretz nasa chayot. What works out very nicely for the Ramban? Well, one of the problems for those who say the Avot kept the Torah is that they actually don't, right? Once there's a Torah, one of the arayot is you're not supposed to marry two sisters. Okay, Yaakov obviously does marry sisters, but what works out nicely for the Ramban? Yeah, but that's when he left Israel, right? He left Israel to go get married. He ran away from Esav. Ah, so since he was in Edom and Suva territory and he was in the land of Israel, that's why he was willing to marry sisters. Okay, so that all works out in the Ramban. I just point out one thing, although I admit this always bothered me a little bit. Okay, when does Yaakov stop, as it were, violating the prohibition of marrying sisters? When Rachel dies. When does she die? When they're coming back from Israel. So the Ramban says that, though. It's like a little chilling, the idea that Rachel dies so that Yaakov wouldn't violate anymore the prohibition of marrying sisters. But so that's a question for another time. But we've now worked out 3-1 on the board, which takes the Midrash seriously. It's really true. David Ben-Tor said, we'll tell all of you guys we'll have to make Aliyah, because real religious life is only in the land of Israel, not just as far as Shemitah is concerned, even as far as Tefillin and Mezuzah are concerned. That's the position of Rashi and the position of the Ramban. Yeah, Josh Shapiro.
Well, couldn't you say that Abraham was always in Eretz Yisrael when he kept it, but then he served milk and meat to the Rachel, no?
Okay, look, I think the simplest shot is, as Aaron said, that the Avot did not keep the Torah.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like, doesn't that disprove what the Ramban is saying? That, well, like, the Avot always kept him in Eretz Yisrael. We have proof of Abraham when he didn't keep him.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Ramban would say about that, but I think there might be ways to get out of it. Okay, anybody else with a comment we've done until now? Okay, now let's start to show that there is another side. Okay, we're going to see, I don't know if we should make, now we make David Ben-Tor the Zionist, I don't know if we make somebody else the representative of Galut. Who should we make the representative of Galut? Eli Jarosho? Okay, you're the anti-Zionist, Eli?
Yeah, after last night, he's quoting the Rav Shechter saying you don't live in Israel at all.
Okay, there we go, okay. We want to say this right.
It's quoting, that's not recording. Can you clarify the Shechter?
Okay. Rav Shechter spoke about Israel enough. Guys, don't quote anything based on Israel. Galut, you just read his article about Yeshiva Aretz. Okay? It's actually available online. You can find it online. Okay, so we were now going to start to tone it down a little bit and see the other side. So before we see the other side, let's actually start toning it down a little bit. So the Gur Aryeh, of course, remember who wrote the Gur Aryeh? It's the Maral, and it's a super commentary on Rashi. Remember, guys, Rashi is very important, so important that there are like 100 commentaries on Rashi's commentary. Two most important ones are Mizrahi and the Gur Aryeh. Those who like Rashi, it's often a good way to jazz up your learning of Rashi. Look at the Gur Aryeh, and they'll try to figure out what was bothering Rashi, what motivated him, how would Rashi respond to his criticisms of him. Very, very interesting for him. Okay? The Gur Aryeh is Maral's commentary on Rashi. Mizrahi is a film of Leo Mizrahi. That was his name. Okay? So let's take a look at source 5. But first we'll do the way he tones it down. So if you look at the second paragraph, guys, on the second page. Okay, you see how the Maral tones down? I think David Ben-Tor was kind of hinting at this. Okay, look at the second paragraph. See, notice it starts with the Ramban. But now we're going down to the line that begins with Kevan. You guys see that line? Yeah? So on the end of that line. If you wouldn't have to, then when you came back to Israel, the mitzvah would be new. It's not new. It's not. Why is it not new? There's only one Matan Torah. It's important in our tradition. There's only one great moment of revelation, not multiple. Levikach kol mitzvot shem chovet haguf chayavim b'chutz laretz. Umash amar, so you're chayav, in tefillin and mitzvot and chutz laretz. Umash amar kidvei shilu chadashim aleichem, hu batzmo tama katuv, shechayav kol mitzvot shem chovet haguf. V'chayav lam b'chutz laretz kmo ba'aretz. Shari ein kan mitzvot chadashot, v'chiyav arishon lo nitbatel. So I think, David, in some ways, it's your point. What's he saying at the end of the day? Whatever the reason is why you're chayev, at the end of the day, you're chayev. And guess what? It's the same chayev as beforehand. So in some ways, you can almost say, okay, this whole practice thing, that's like in the realm of tamei mitzvot, but it doesn't change the underlying halachic reality. What is the underlying halachic reality? You have to put on tefillin in Tveria, and you have to put on tefillin in Queens. Right, and it's the same chiyuv that the halacha does not change one iota between the Israel performance and the chutzot performance. So one point I would make, like, even if I'm in the Ramban and I accept this whole formulation, it's to make sure it's not novel when you come back. At the end of the day, you're chayev. So then I think you're basically arguing that, right? So that is a way of kind of toning down the whole Rashi Ramban Sifri a little bit. Whatever the rationale is, whatever the Jewish philosophy behind it is, you're chayev. You're chayev. Okay, so you want to be halachic about it. The halacha does not change between Eretz Yisrael and Chutzarts. Okay, we'll go to that so far. Okay, but I still think someone could say, okay, but still philosophically from Machshava perspective, if I build on the Sifri, it really sounds like I'm saying that the real thing is only here. Right? Even if technically I'm chayiv in both places, but the real thing is only going on in the land of Israel. So I just want to show you that not everybody thought that was true. And then we're going to see different ways of relating to the Sifri. So the strongest voice that didn't think it was true, I think, is the Meshech Chachma, Rabbi Simcha Cohen from Dvinsk. He passed away in 1926. Okay, he has a very powerful theory that he works throughout the Torah. He says it several times. Okay, we'll look at his theory right now. No, he does not relate to the Sifri. It'd be interesting to see if he quotes anyone. As far as I know, I've never seen him relate to the Sifri in his writings. Maybe he does somewhere. It'd be interesting to check. But he takes an important Hashkafic position. Let's see what the Meshech Chachma says. It's not going to be an accident that he's making this comment on Moshe breaking the Luchot. We'll see why in a second. What's really Judaism about? Torah and faith in God. Any idea of sanctity, Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Hema, Pratei v'snifei HaTorah. They're only, as it were, branches of Torah. And they only get Kedusha from the Torah. Okay, Meshech Chachma is a huge believer in the following, guys. There's really only two things in this world that have inherent Kedusha. Only Hashem and the Torah. That's it. Hashem and the Torah have inherent Kedusha. Everything else is just a product of that. What is the implications? V'lochein look what he says now, guys. Ein chiluk l'chol Torah. There's no distinction bein b'makom bein b'zman, whether it's geography or chronology. V'hi shaveh be'eretz Yisrael v'chutz laretz. That's a pretty strong statement, right? What did he just say? Torah is the same in Israel and chutz laretz. And what's the one caveat? Levad mitzvot atzuyah v'aretz. Except, of course, for, as it were, Shemitah and Shumanavaiser. Now, he doesn't relate to the Sifri, but I think we could say Rabbi Meir Simcha is clearly advancing a very different kind of position. Right? He's kind of downplaying the role of a specific location. Look what he says now, it's also interesting. The Chenu Shaveh ben Ladama Gavor Shebekvoim, Moshe Shugim, La Shafel Shebeshvalim. This is really fascinating. Those who have democratic or egalitarian impulses will like this very much. What's his other point, says Rabbi Meir Simcha? What did he just say? Just like there's no difference in time and place. There's no difference in people. Namely, guess what, guys? Moshe Rabbeinu has the same Torah as Yitzchak Blau. We have the same Torah. There's no difference in obligation and detail between any of us. Now, what's one of the things Rabbi Meir Simcha is trying to accomplish here? But he says this several times. He doesn't like the idea that you think that your Judaism can only be realized in a limited fashion. Like, how can I connect to God? Only if I'm standing in Yerushalayim. He doesn't like that idea. Or how can I connect to God? Only if I could be in contact with the Rebbe. Right? So I think that the Meshech Chacham is fighting against that. That's what he's fighting against. No, you connect to God in New Zealand. And you connect to God even if there's no rabbinic figure of greatness around. Now, I just want to point out one thing before I move on, guys. He says a really interesting pshat in the breaking of the Lucho. Okay? Now, let's think for a second, guys. Why did Am Yisrael panic at the time of Cheder Egel? Because they thought Moshe wasn't coming back. So, for our Meir Simcha, that's precisely the danger he's nervous about. What do they think? Our connection to God can only be manifest through Moshe. And then he says an amazing. So why does Moshe break the Luchot? This is an amazing Chiddush, guys. Because he wants to say, and there's a lot of other pshat why Moshe breaks Luchot. You could say it's an educational move. You could say, Am Yisrael no longer deserves it. Guess what Meir Simcha says? Had Moshe brought the Luchot, what would the people have said? The only way to connect to God is through the Luchot. Like the Luchot would have become the magic substitute for Moshe. And according to the Meshech Chachma, Moshe wants to teach them, you guys connect to God no matter what. You don't need me, and you don't need the Luchot. And if that was the mistake, that's why Moshe has to make the Luchot. So notice we have, we'll get to comments in 1 second. Again, he doesn't relate to the Sifri, but then we could safely say, or maybe Simcha is really in a different camp here. He's very adamant about the ability to have a robust relationship with Hashem, no matter where you are, and no matter who you are. And therefore, he emphasizes that there isn't really a distinction between mitzvot and Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. David? Yes. Okay, so it's interesting. Okay, so I have wondered about this. See, I love this Meshech Chachma. I have wondered about David's question, like, why isn't God, he say that only God's inherently divine? Like, why does he include the Torah also? I will say, though, that we do have this idea in Kabbalistic sources, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will write a Chadu. Okay, so maybe Rabbi Simcha is thinking in those terms that somehow he's more willing, I realize this really should be a philosophy class, guys, more willing to identify God with Torah than to identify God with a person or a land. Right? That's what emerges, right? Otherwise, the Meshech doesn't really work. He seems to say, I'm more willing to identify God with Torah than to identify God with the land of Israel or with Moshe Rabbeinu. But maybe you could get an argument for that, David. Yeah, Ellie. Okay, but that's fine. I didn't even have to say get into the chronology question, but I still what I said is true. No, don't you say that you're more willing to identify God with Torah than to identify God with Eretz Yisrael?
I don't think that. I don't think it needs to be true that I think you could very well say that God and Torah are more
central
than God.
Wait, I'm sorry. Okay, Akiva, he says the line. Where he does quote. I'm sorry. You're right. Akiva Gardner, very good. He does quote the line. Ki Kadosh Baruch Hu write to Chad. He does quote the line. Yeah, that is interesting. That definitely, when you write your sefer about Machshava, you'll quote this issue. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to start a stretch if you're saying that, because the Torah is a blueprint that God gave men of how they're supposed to live. So it's not crazy to say that Ben and Aaron, the land that he intended Adam to live in, would also be an Arabic Noah. I don't think that's a good stretch.
No, but there's the entire Torah, and then there's a part of the Torah. Right? Living in Eretz Yisrael is a part of the Torah, it's not the Torah in its entirety.
All right, Donovan, did you test positive or negative?
Yeah.
Positive. Oh, too bad. All right, even though he's positive, Donovan is going to come along online. There'll be a 4-hour debate between Donovan and Eli Jarosho about the role of Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be great, guys. So you can either bring a book or listen to them discussing the role of Eretz Yisrael in Judaism. Okay, next. Okay, now so far, if we stop this year right now, what do we have? We kind of have two camps, right? The Sifri, Rashi, Ramban camp, and the Meshech Chachma camp. And it might sound like things are really weighted in favor of the Sifri, Rashi, Ramban. But what if some Mefarshim are going to say that there are other ways to interpret the Sifri? You could kind of co-opt the Sifri to the Meshech Chachma camp. Now the Sifri sounds pretty clear. You only do mitzvah and chutz laaretz because they're practice. But what if the Sifri was getting at something else? What if the Sifri was saying there might be other reasons why mitzvot and chutz laaretz would be a challenge, but not necessarily because you're not chayiv? Maybe the Sifri was making a different kind of point. Okay, and at that point, the Sifri wouldn't really be saying that inherently mitzvot should not apply in chutz laaretz. So we're going to see 3 or 4 very interesting ways to read the Sifri that way. Noam Emun.
Another way to read the Sifri perhaps would be like good at when we're, it's very good that especially our community is very encouraging of Zionism. At the same time, this is something you also mentioned last night, is that like you can't forget about the other 6 or 12 mitzvahs. It's not like Zionism versus like everything else. It's like not only do we have to like remember the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, it's not like oh, once we get Eretz Yisrael, it's like, oh, we can relax the mitzvahs. That we get Eretz Yisrael for schus doing the mitzvahs like with Hakpata and like being like very diligent in our mitzvahs. So you do them, you practice them, you can close the audience, so when you get there, you do them at even a higher level. Like you're very
okay, good. Okay, excellent. So we're going to see you guys, I think, 4 readings. We have time for 4 readings. In 10 minutes would be perfect. Okay, let's go back to the Maral. Okay, the Maral is going to give a rereading of the Sifri. So this is before the Maral got to the Ramban. He's just, we're in the world of Rashi now. Okay, so he quotes Rashi. If you look at the last line on the first page, the Yesh Mefarshim Ki Kasher Galu Ben Umot, when we're in exile, Ve'em Yisrael Mekomot Ubatim Bifnei Atzmam. What does he envision when we're in Galut? It's going to be hard. Hard to settle down. Maybe they won't want to sell us their houses. Okay, here we go. Rak al derech shelav v'schirut. What's going to happen at the most? We're just going to rent and borrow. In kain lo yikaimu Yisrael mitzvah mezuzah begalut. She'en lem batim yuchadim. I'll go back to this in a second, guys. V'chein tefillin b'fnei shetzarech shelo yasiach datum in a tefillin. T'b'yameim dagat v'tirtud ha'galut yoter. So what is it claiming, guys? It's not about some widespread idea that mitzvahs are not obligated in chutzlarts. There's specific reasons why a chutzlarts existence might make it difficult to do these mitzvot, right? Tefillin requires a certain seriousness. You shouldn't be distracted. Some of you guys learned this as you're in sukkah. So maybe galut, you're just distracted all the time, right? Things aren't easy. You don't feel at home. And therefore, there might be a sense that I can't adequately perform the mitzvah of tefillin. Now, I have to admit, in mezuzah, this one that surprised me a little bit, because even if you rent a house in Chutz Laretz, after 30 days, you are a chayv in mezuzah. But he seems to envision some kind of question, since you don't really have a permanent home, maybe you won't feel obligated in mezuzah. But notice, if this maral is right, it kind of totally neutralizes the Sifri. The Sifri had no havamina that halachic life is only in Eretz Israel, no havamina whatsoever. The Sifri had a havamina that galut will get in the way of things like tefillin and mezuzah, because of the difficulties of galut, and therefore I needed to say, you know what, overcome those difficulties. Even in the galut, find a way to get yourself to get enough to fulfill tefillin. Find a way to have a permanent enough residence to fulfill mezuzah. That is what the message of the Sifri is. No.
Also, another point Rav Schaffner makes a lot is that he says that, in quotes from Gemara, I don't remember where exactly it is, but he says that you're allowed to be very strong. The only time you're missing the marriage is strong. So that's the case. How can Chazal? I mean, that's true. That the Gemara, which I assume we're going to be honest about, then like Chazal clearly didn't think that you can move out of like call Torah Kula for the sake of like one mitzvah. You can tell me like Talmud Torah is going to get Kula, but from like a practical perspective.
All right. So the truth is, I'm leaving it aside since I'm running out of time. I mean, it is a worthy point, but if you don't mind, I just want to make sure we get to all 4 approaches here. Yeah. Okay, very good. Could you guys go with cool Kamarzi into it? Well, very good. How do you know that Kamar David Bentor? Okay, so guys, so David Bentor, he'll be debating both Eli Jarosho and Noam Maimon for 4 hours online. Okay, what? All right, guys, it is a really interesting debate, but I have 7 minutes to go, so I'm sorry. I'm going to move on. Okay, so we got one way to do it. Let's now go to the third page, and we'll see 3 other really interesting things. Okay, so the Ksava Kabbalah, I'll do this outside, guys. The Ksava Kabbalah is from Yaakov Zvi Mecklenburg. He had an interesting parish on Chumash. He was a German rav in the 1800s. Okay, and he says, he notices the difference in the Sifri and Rashi. Remember we noticed this also, guys? That Rashi said tefillin and mezuzah, the Sifri just said mitzvot. So he claims that the Sifri was not talking about tefillin and mezuzah. The Sifri was talking about Shumot and Maestro. What's the Sifri suggesting? Maybe you should do Shumot and Maestro in Chutz Laretz because you'll keep in practice for Eretz Yisrael. So obviously, if he's right, that would totally neutralize the Sifri also. The Sifri was never talking about Kol Torah Kula. The Sifri was talking about Mitzvot Zlibarts. Now, of course, the difficulty with the Ksava Kabbalah is what we said before. Rashi did not arbitrarily pick Tefillin and Mezuzah. Rashi picked Tefillin and Mezuzah because That's what the Pesukim are about. So I have to admit, it is a difficult reading, but he does something extremely clever. You guys are either going to love this or hate this. You're not allowed to be indifferent. Okay, look at the last four lines. After he makes this distinction between Sifri and Rashi, he wants to read it back into Rashi. The Efsher Shenishtapsha Lefaninu Hanuscha B'Loshen Rashi. This is a great word to know. Who knows what a shibush is? A mistake. Good. Maybe there's a mistake in Rashi. Max Goldstein, you in there?
Yeah.
Are you learning Tanakh? What are you learning?
No, I'm learning
Tarsi. Okay, great. You're a serious guy, Max. Okay, even though you still have to bring me your dad's book. Okay, so there's a mistake in Rashi. There's an amazing guy. Think what he says. What did Rashi write on his manuscript? Key mitzvos. Which ones? Tough of mem. Josh Milstein got it. He's a smart guy. And then, unfortunately, a later scribe misread Rashi. Rashi wrote tough of mem. What did Rashi mean according to the Ksav Kabbalah? Shumun HaMais wrote, but a silly scribe thought he meant. Tfilin umesuzah. Not bad, huh? Guys, a pretty remarkable Ksav Kabbalah. So after clip, now let me make a point, guys. If you're not convinced by this, it's not so crucial for Rashi, because again, the Sifri never said which mitzvah. So it's easier for the Ksav Kabbalah to read this into the Sifri than to read this into Rashi. But he even wants to read into Rashi. He wants to claim that Rashi said Shumun HaMaisrod, but a scribe then made a mistake and made a tefillin mezuzah. Although I have to give the Ksav Kabbalah credit for honesty. Look at the last line. Amnam Reiti L'Ramban. But the Ramban, who's not so long after, although he has 200 years after Rashi, what's Lahatik? Copied, very good. So you know, guys, if you're a scholar, what are you trying to do? Well, let's see people who are a little bit after Rashi, did they have Rashi's Nusach or not? Did they quote? Because that would obviously make it harder to argue. There's a mistake. So he does notice, you know, when Ramban quotes Rashi, he quotes Rashi exactly as we have it. So you'd have to say the scribal error happened pretty quickly. Right? It happened between Rashi's time and Ramban's time. Yeah, Josh.
Is Shumo Maser often used as a term to just say Mitzvotzuli Baretz? Like, why wouldn't Rashi just say Mitzvotzuli Baretz in abbreviation?
Okay. The truth is, I have to admit, guys, even though I admit my heart is more of the Meshech Chachma than the Ramban on this one, that because the specific mitzvot in the section are Tzvot Mezuzah, I think actually it's unlikely that Ksav Kabbalah is right about this. Because again, had Rashi just picked two mitzvot arbitrarily, I think you might have a good point. But it's not arbitrary. He's clearly just reading the second paragraph of Shema, where the mitzvot in question are tefillin and mezuzah. So I admit, I actually think that's more likely that this is all true and it was really Shema and Mesorah. I do not think that's so likely. Okay, let's do two more. Okay, and then we'll wrap it up. These are the most interesting. Okay, the Radvaz, right, David ibn Zimra, was a posek in Egypt in the 1400s. He has a lot of tshuva, a lot of beautiful tshuva. Look what he says. He says the Sifri is at straight value. It's about tefillin mezuzah, but it's not what you think. Fourth line, in the middle of the line. Hutzrach lazirem, why does God have to warn them? Afal pi shem chovat haguf, shelo yifarku meilem ol mitzvot, mifnei dochak shibur hagalot v'gzeirat hashmadot. What does he want to claim? What's the Sifri getting at? It's actually a very beautiful shot. It's going to be tough, right? We know we Jews have been around for a long time. And obviously, we've had different treatments by different peoples, but we've suffered a lot. There's been a lot of anti-Semitism, a lot of religious persecution. And that might mean that in the Galut, it's particularly difficult to keep mitzvot. There might be this temptation, you know, keeping mitzvot makes us separate, and then we're a target. And at that point, there might be this desire to assimilate, right? Some of you may know, in the 1800s, people would talk about baptism as kind of your ticket into Western civilization. Right? That was your entry ticket. Right, and then you could not deal anymore with having to, the difficulties of Jewish persecution. So, but at that point, notice, I think the Rav Oz is a very powerful pshat, but if the Rav Oz is right, what was the Medrash's Havamina? Not that mitzvot don't apply in chutzarts, but rather that the difficulties of chutzarts will make it very hard to keep mitzvot. It might motivate you to drop it. And therefore, the Sifri is saying, no, we want to make sure you keep it up. Now, this might sound a little bit like Maral, but notice, I think it's much broader than Maral. Because what did the Maral say? It's not about the difficulties of Chutz La'aretz in general. It was specifically in terms of Tefillin Mezuzah. Right? There might be technical halachic reasons why you'd stop keeping them in Chutz La'aretz, right? Because of Hesach Hadad and the like. I think for the Radvaz, it's a much more powerful and broader idea. Right? You might think that mitzvot in general are just too difficult and trying, given the difficulties of chutzos. I will say one more thing, guys, and I think here's where a little historical consciousness is helpful. and this is true for me too, not just for you guys. I think most of us who grew up in America in the late 20th century or early 21st century, it's hard to relate to this a little bit. Because it's really, in contemporary America, it's not difficult to give into it. I mean, no one's persecuting us. Right? But even talk to your great-grandparents, like those who came to America, say, in the 20s and 30s, right? Then it was really hard. It was hard to be Shomer Shabbos and have a job. Right? So we, and I'm not saying we should be unhappy. It's great. It's great that we live in an easier time. But just have a little historical consciousness, realize how much of Jewish history it was difficult, right, to much more difficult to keep, to adhere to a halachic lifestyle. Okay, last shot. Okay, so in source 9 of the Nefesh Yonah, done this with Jonas and Eibeschitz, and he says a very interesting idea. We'll close with this. Okay, very good. How do you, very yeshivish, you early Jewish show. Okay, we'll have to figure out. So there's a competition. Also online, we'll have a competition. Who is the most yeshivish guy in yeshiva? Is it Noah Maimon or early Jewish show? Okay, that was also, a lot of fun stuff is going on. You think it's a no-brainer? No brainer? Okay. Josh Shapiro says no brainer.
No-brainer.
Okay.
They're both in my van. I have to listen to the whole thing.
Okay.
Wait, Rob, no brainer
for you. You said no-brainer. Yeah. See, wait, guys, there's something contradictory to saying it's a no-brainer. You have to ask, who is the no-brainer? Right? Doesn't that kind of undermine the entire thing? Okay. You can't do that. It's a no-brainer. Well, who's the no-brainer? Okay. So there we go. Let's go to... Rav Yonis and Eibeschitz. Okay, so he says here in the third line, "Vine kamo atzvilin shem alav him chotam va'ot ki yudi, kamo kinu chotam od hamzuz ha'shabet ha'bit ha'chatzero, kol roav yakiru ki kanu dirat yudi." This is a very powerful shot. According to Rav Yonis and Eibeschitz, why is this a free focus on tefillin and mezuzah? What's the idea? They're very, very public. Right, you have a mezuzah. What, let's say your question like, should I be publicly Jewish or not? What could be a bigger symbol than to put a mezuzah on your door? Right? That is a powerful symbol of public Jewish identity. Says Rav Yonatan Eibeschitz, "Umeata yesh lamar dezeo peshes afri, degam begalut v'kashartim la'od, dainu begalui le'ekol." I think this is very powerful. And this is like a sure claim, more a little bit like a machshavah here. According to Eibeschitz, what's the idea of the Sifri, guys? It's a little bit different. It's different than the Radvaz. What did the Radvaz say? Keep mitzvot, even though Golod is difficult. Guys, according to the Sifri, what's the point? Not keep mitzvot per se, but be willing to be publicly Jewish, even though that's not the same point. You could say, I'll be very diligent and keep all the mitzvot, but I'll keep everything on a very under-the-radar kind of thing. Like, not so good to be this publicly proud Jew. So I think for Yonatan Eibeschitz, the Sifri is a call for public pride in your Jewishness. Like, don't be ashamed of it. Don't be embarrassed about it. Do it, right? Obviously, do it in a way that's not overbearing, that, you know, you're not giving people a hard time, but why shouldn't you be proud of your mezuzah on the door? Okay, so just to sum the whole year, guys, because I've already read a little bit over time, I'm going to start in a second. We now have, and like in many Ashkenazic topics, guys, both approaches are true. You could be Dov Inventor, you could be Eli Jarosho, it's all good. Right? You could go with the Sifri Rashi Ramban approach. I think there's no denying it at the end of the day. They do seem to say that all mitzvot are meant for the land of Israel. I think that's the Ramban. I think you have to face the facts. That's what the Ramban says. And even tefillin is a better performance in Israel than chutzos. You do have that Ramban. However, you do have the other side. We saw the Meshech Chachma was very adamant about it, that it doesn't depend on a person, it doesn't depend on a location. Again, we understood what was motivating the Meshech Chachma. And then we had four possible reinterpretations of the Sifri. Just review for 1 second. Can we get them all down, guys? If you're the Ksava Kabbalah, how do you read the Sifri? The Sifri was never... Ksava Kabbalah, guys? Was never about tefillin and mezuzah. It was about Shulam Maestro. If you're the Maral, how do you tone down the Sifri? It was about tefillin because there's specific issues regarding their performance. But the two that are most important to me are the Radvaz and Rav Yonatan Eibeschitz. If you're the Radvaz, what's trying the Sifri? Life in Golod is going to be difficult. Find a way to keep your traditions anyway. Okay, that is the Radvaz, which we Jews have done for 2,000 years. Very impressive thing. And that's Radvaz. Can there be some Eibeschitz? Not only keep them, but be proud of them. We have a lot to be proud of in our tradition. All right, guys. Everybody should have a great Shabbos. I'm looking forward to spending Shabbos with you. Yeah.